has been the traditional sacred day on which Americans do honor to the brave men of the North and South who fell in the war between the states. Throughout the land, people gather to lay floral tributes on their resting places. Memorial Day has come to hold a deeper pathos for us because each passing year sees the ranks of the brave men of the blue and gray grow sadly thinner. Tonight, the Columbia Workshop commemorates this day with a broadcast presenting a dramatized character study of a man who fought in the Union Army, as well as a specially prepared program from Richmond, Virginia, which will include the story of the founding of the first Memorial Day and an interview with several honored veterans of the Confederate ranks. The Columbia Workshop presents Private Throg, a short play written for tonight's program by Parker Finley, who also plays the leading role. The hometown of Private Throg is one of 100,000 crossroads settlements of its kind. The name of this one happens to be Cuddy Bend. It is Memorial Day, and Elias Throg, only Civil War veteran of the village, sits on the piazza of his granddaughter, Minnie Tweedy's house, and watches the folks go by on their way to the exercises at the Grange Hall. It is hot, the road is dusty, but there is no sign of perspiration on Elias Throg's face, although he wears his veteran's uniform, peaked cap and all. As the straggly groups pass along the road, Elias rocks in his chair and occasionally calls to one of his neighbors.
Hi, Amos. Well, I see you going over.
Yeah, coming along, ain't you, Elias?
Oh, I may, by and by. I got some business to attend to here first.
Yeah?
Yeah, social business. Say, Amos, that rubber collar you got on kind of blinds me when the sun strikes it. Hope it don't melt on you.
Hey, I'll watch it.
Dude. Minnie?
Yes, Papa?
Well, come out here, can't you?
What do you want?
Come here, can't you? What you want me to do, holler my head off and get Quincy again?
Oh, for heaven's sake, what is it?
What time was that struck?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock what? Standard or daylight saving?
My lordy, you've asked me that 3 times a day ever since April. It's daylight saving.
That's a pretty way to talk to your old grandfather that's took care of you for 30 years now, ain't it?
Well, I can't help it, Grandpa. Might pay some attention and remember when I tell you about
things. Took care of you and went without myself for 30 years. Half that time took care of your worthless husband, your brat.
Now, you stop it, Grandpa. You know as well as I do you ain't taking care of Leroy now. He's working 8 hours every day.
Working? Yeah. Trying to break a shovel handle, leaning on it. Chasing a leaf all over the road.
Oh.
That's strenuous. Leroy. Never even liked his name. Sounds lazy.
Now, you've got to stop it, Grandpa.
Yeah.
I ain't going to stand here and listen to you abuse my husband just because he's been unlucky about getting work sometimes. First thing you know, we'll pack up and leave.
Yeah, why don't you? Why don't you? Go ahead. Hi, Lucius.
Hey.
Going to exercises?
Yeah, I'm thinking of it. You going to get over?
Oh, I don't know. I may get there late. I ain't sure yet.
Well, I'll get there late, all right, if I don't get started. You hollering at me every 5 minutes to find out what time it is. Baby in there, wide awake.
Hey, Miss Puff. Going to exercises?
Yeah, better come along.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Hitch up your petticoat. Lump.
Dear, dear, dear. There she is now. Fretful as she can be, and the flies eating her up in there. I have to keep running out here to see what you want. I don't know why that station agent's girl ain't showed up to take care of her. Suppose if she don't get here, I'll have to stay home and miss everything.
Why didn't Leroy stay in tend to her?
Leroy, now you know he's on 2 of the committees. He was up and dressed in his uniform before you was out of bed. Yes, and he's been going out ever since, tight as he could go.
In his uniform? What uniform?
What uniform? You know just as well as I do. His home volunteer's uniform he wore in 1918.
Leroy never smelt much smoke, did he?
Now, you stop it, Grandpa. Leroy was ready and willing to go when his call came. The government wouldn't take him on account of his feet.
Probably thought he couldn't run fast enough.
Leroy was ready, and just because he joined the home volunteers to protect us, in case that family of foreigners up there on the hill started poisoning drinking water, you make fun of him.
Only time I ever see a costume like them home volunteers gets into was when a minstrel show come here one summer, had a street parade.
Yes, well, anyway, the Legion boys ain't ashamed to ask Leroy to sing America the Beautiful down there this afternoon.
Leroy?
Yes, Leroy. He's got a very lovely singing voice.
My Godfrey, I'd as soon listen to the pump squeak.
Yes, well, that's because you ain't got no ear for music.
What? By Godfrey, if I didn't have to get up to do it, I'd hit you over the head with this cane.
Dear, dear, dear.
Well, go ahead, why don't you? Get started. You wouldn't get there in time to hear Leroy Bella.
Go? How can I go till that Crandall girl comes to take care of Viney?
Oh, bring Viney out here on the piazza. I might as well listen to a squawk out here as in there.
Well,
Fetch her out. Get her out here. That's what you plan to do anyway.
Well, all right, Grandpa. I will leave her, but I know you don't want to do it.
What difference does that make? I've been doing for other people all my life. Get her out here, get her out here. Don't expect me to lug that clothes basket, do you?
All right, I'll go and get her. I would like to get there in time to hear Leroy.
Oh, gotcha. Hey, Gideon.
Yes.
Going over to the hall?
Yeah, hadn't ought to waste time, but my wife wanted me to.
Well, that settled it, I guess. Get out of here. Get out of here, hen. Get out. This piazza was swept off clean this morning.
There. Shh. Now. Don't cry. Your grandpa won't want to take care of you.
Better not cry or I'll throw you into the well.
Now, Grandpa, you stop that kind of talk. There. Now, I'll put this mosquito netting over you. The old flies won't get the baby there.
Where's the bottle?
Right here. And the other things.
Never mind no other things. I ain't looking for them. Go on, put on your dolman and get going.
Yeah. Well, that Crandall girl ought to be here any minute now. What time are you coming over at the hall?
Oh, I may not come at all.
Oh, of course you'll come. You always have. You just want to climb up on the platform late so as to make an impression.
Impression? Hmm. Hey, Godfrey, I'm the only G.A.R. man in Cuddy Bend, ain't I? And everybody knows it.
Well, all right then. You ought to be at the hall on time.
Well, I was on time when McCall come in 62. I was on time when I stopped a mini-ball in my thigh down there in Antietam. I was on time all night at the Battle of the Wilderness when the captain says, "Flag is down, boys. Who's going?" Keep still. Godfrey, if you're going to yell like that, I might as well go and listen to your father sing. Well, go ahead, Minnie. What you waiting for?
You think you'll be all right, Grandpa?
All right, go on.
Well, now you take good care of the baby, and if she starts to cry too hard,
I'll give her a whack.
No, you won't neither, now.
There, you're all right. Now stop it, Viney. You ain't gonna cry. I don't hold nothing against you. It's your folks. That Leroy. Home volunteers. Godfrey. It's a wonder General Grant don't turn over in his tomb. Maybe he has, I don't know. Want me to sing to you? You do? Tent in tonight on the old campground. Give us a saw. You know, they think they're something. They're American Legion jamboree. Thank God for you, Barney. Well, they don't know what real soldiering is. Got this old Colonel Dusenberry coming all the way from Bangor to make the address. Probably bringing him in a wheelchair. He's 2 years older than I be if he's a day. Yeah. 2 years. Oldest Civil War officer in Bangor. Godfrey, mighty, I know him. I knew him back in 62. He wasn't much then. Probably ain't no better 75 years afterwards. Now, I can tell you all this, Viney, because you won't repeat it, you know. I can trust you, yes. I can trust you. Only one in this family I can trust. Who's that? Oh, Hezzy Blaisdell. Hey, Hezzy! Say, no, drive over here a minute. Come on. I got to take care of this young one here.
Hey, are you going to wait here, like you said, till the colonel's train gets in?
That's right. Now, listen. When he gets off the cars, I want you to get a hold of him right away. Tell him there's a poor, feeble old G.A.R. man up here that wants to see him just a minute for the last time before he hears the final reveille.
The final what?
Oh, you home volunteer fellas wouldn't know. Now, listen, I'll be in the setting room here. Once you get him landed, I'll take care of the rest.
All right, I'll do it, Uncle Elias. I'll drive him right up here in my own car. Glory, that's the bugle for him to fall in over there. They're going to march down as far as here to meet the colonel and to welcome him. I'll get him in here, Uncle Elias.
Fall in. Fall in the gutter. Viney, now listen. I was telling you about this old fellow Dusenberry. You see, him and me, we was privates together back in the beginning of the war. Rebellion. Dusenberry and Herb Liskum and me. Get away, Fly. Go on. Yeah, we was just young rascals together, you understand. I didn't find out a lot of things about this Dusenberry until later. Herb and Jim Dusenberry and me. Brave, you know. Brave as lions. Well, I was, anyway. But finally, one night, early in the war, we was out on a kind of a spree in a little town down south there. Got kind of sentimental, I suppose, and one of us made a proposition that we ought to get together 20 years afterwards and drink a quart of whiskey. Yeah. So we swore an oath that nothing would ever keep us from meeting up if we was all alive. But finally, next day, there was a big engagement. We got separated. Yeah, I never see poor Herb Liscombe again. He got blowed all to pieces again. Get out here, and I told you to keep off this piazza. Ain't you got no decency? No decency at all. Well, Viney, next time I heard about this Dusenberry, 5-6 months later, he was a sergeant. I was still a private. Well, finally he got transferred over to another company, and I lost all track of him for about, 2 years. Well, the war drug on, it drug on. Long 65, I got pretty sick of soldiering. So another fellow and me, we made up our minds we'd take a little furlough without getting permission, you know? Yeah. So we skun out one dark night, but they catched us. Catched us and brought us up for court-martial as deserters. And Viney, who do you suppose one of the officers was sitting in on that trial? That's right. You're just right. Jim Dusenberry. Yeah. Captain Dusenberry now he was. I was still a private. First class, though. First class. But Viney, he never batted eye when he see me. Looked at me just as though I was a yellow dog. Yeah. They sentenced me. Sentenced me to die for desertion. Well, Sir Viney, if it hadn't been for a stroke of luck, I'd been shot at sunrise the next morning just as sure as thin. Yeah. But so happened the Johnny Rebs they picked that night to make another one of their surprise attacks. In the fracas, I got out of the guardhouse, scooted through a stretch of woods, you know, and next forenoon got over to another detachment of Union soldiers and never heard a word more about that court-martial. Couple of weeks later, Lee surrendered. Before long, I got mustered out. Well, I guess all the records of my desertion must have been burned or lost or something, because when the time come, they give me my honorable discharge. Private. First class. Private first class. So I come home here. The only soldier in Cuddy Bend to get back alive. And Viney, I was a hero. That's Elias Throg, they'd say. Private, first class. He's a fighter, you know. Shot 100 ribs. Tell us the story of the war, Private Throg. Yeah. Well, Viney, at first I stuck pretty much to the facts. Well, I say at first I did. Then I started to add on here and there. But mind you, I never said a word about me deserting or about that court-martial. Well, every decoration day, you know, I used to set up on the rostrum and give the address to the school children, tell them war stories. Yeah, then this world war skirmish, that come on, and they kind of begun to forget about me. Last 10 years, I didn't no more than sit on the platform and rock. And this time, the Legion boys, they said it would be a good idea to get one of the old Civil War veterans to address them. Kind of a curiosity. I was ready. But they just disregarded me, Viney. Sent up to Bangor, mind you. For who? That's right. Old Dusenberry. Colonel Dusenberry. Well, so when I heard about that, it just knocked me over almost, because, you see, I'd be sitting up there on the platform, Viney, and he'd sight me, and he'd hear my name held up maybe as the Civil War hero of Cuddy Bend. Yeah, and then that court-martial, that would come back to his mind. I'd be in the soup. Right in the chowder. Now, I tell you, Viney, I was in a muddle for a spell. And then, you know, it come to me how I'd handle him. He's coming in on the 2:20 train, you know. I told the boys I want to see him here at the house before he goes over at the Grange Hall. And I'm so feeble, I may not be able to go. Feeble. When he gets here, I'll be ready for him. I've got a little flask of whiskey right here, you know. Already, I'm going to ask him to share it with me. Remind him of that oath that we three took. I got the two tumblers already, too. Now, one of them's clean on the bottom. The other one's got a drop or two of rat killer in it. Yeah, rat killer. Nobody won't know that, just me, though. Just you and me, Viney. The rest is just in the hands of the Lord. He'll even things up. Amen. That old buzzard ain't never going to tell the folks here in the bend that I wasn't a hero. No. Yeah, choo-choo. There she is. Couldn't be long now. I'll sit right here, you know, after I've put them two tumblers out and poured out a couple of stiff drinks. Yours will be a stiff drink, all right. Colonel Dusenberry, I'll say, Maybe you don't remember me and Herb Liscombe and that little agreement we made to meet up when the cruel war's over. He'll probably say he does. And I'll say, well, drink up, Colonel, for old time's sake. And then, Viney, when he's gulped down his whiskey, I'll say, and maybe you don't remember that court-martial in an old blue barn down south there when they sentenced first-class Private Throg to be shot down at sunrise. I'll tell him. And by that time, that old pison will be well down his belly, you know. And while I watch him squirm like an angleworm on a fishhook, I'll say, Colonel Dusenberry, I'm your old comrade Elias Throg, private, first class, and I just fed you a dose of rat poison. How do you like that, sir, I'll say. Who's that? Oh, it's that Crandall brat. Well, it's about time.
Mrs. Throg!
What is it? Where you been? Out of town? You're about an hour late here.
Mrs. Throg, Papa wanted me to run up here and tell you a telegram just come from Bangor. You know that old Civil War man that was going to talk over at the hall?
What about him? What about him? Get it out.
He dropped dead in Bangor, getting onto the train.
Well, that's too bad, ain't it? Fool me again.
Well, Mr. Blaisdell was down there. He tried to call the Legion boys down at the hall, but the line's busy. I don't know what they're going to do. No speaker.
Oh. Well, in that case, I...
Oh, here comes Hezzy Blaisdell in his car now.
Hello, Hezzy.
Hi.
Well, poor old fellow dropped dead on you.
Yeah. That's right, Uncle Elias. We are up against it, I guess. Say, suppose you would feel well enough to get into my car and go over to the hall and give us just a few remarks, same as you used to years ago?
Oh, no. Nobody'd want to hear me.
Oh, shucks. Sure they would. You could tell them about Lee's surrender and how you stood next to Ulysses S. Grant and...
Stood next to him. He was leaning on me. Had his hand on my shoulder.
Yeah, well, I mean... And that one about President Lincoln, about the Gettysburg speech?
What you mean when I says, speak up, A.B.? They can't hear you good in the back there?
That's it. Well, will you do it, Uncle Elias?
Well...
You'll save the day for us, if you will. Colonel Dusenberry dying has just about knocked the blocks out from under us fellas.
Yeah, well, I tell you confidential, Hezzy.
Yeah?
Now, I never let on before, but maybe it's just as well it turned out the way it did.
Why, what do you mean?
Why, this Colonel Dusenberry, between you and me, he didn't have a very clean record back in 65.
Do tell.
Yeah. He come pretty near being court-martialed once.
Court-martialed?
Yep. For deserting.
No.
Yep. Kind of disgraceful. I saved him, as a matter of fact.
Well, Lord almighty. Well, come on, Uncle Elias. Let's get over to the hall and get going.
Oh, wait a minute. Della?
Yes?
You going to take care of the baby?
Yes, Mr. Clark.
All right. Careful, don't drop. Let me get this dagger hitched onto my belt here. I headed out here on the piazza today, polishing it up.
Dagger?
Yep.
Say, you never carried a dagger in the war, did you, Uncle Elias?
Carried it, hell. Took it away from John Wilkes Booth.
Lord almighty, there comes the boys playing a march. They don't know yet about old Dusenberry.
Well, come on, Hezzy, let's get going.
Right.
Attention! Right, fish! Forward! Hurt! Yes, sir, Hezzy, Lincoln says to me once, says, they say you're a drinking man, Private Throg. Drink whiskey. I says, well, you might say so, but call me Elias, Abe. Elias, he says, I wish the other boys could find out the brand you drink. Yeah, put my shawl around you, he says.
You've been listening to the Columbia Workshops production of Private Throg, a play especially written for this program by Parker Fenley, who also played the title role. The production was under the direction of Earl McGill. Continuing our workshop program in honor of Memorial Day, we will hear the story of the founding of the first Memorial Day and an interview with several honored soldiers at the Confederate Veterans Home through station WRVA. We take you now to Richmond, Virginia.
73 years ago, shortly after the historic Memorial Day of Rome, Georgia, the wide, leafy avenues of Richmond furnished the setting for a stately, solemn procession in honor of Stonewall Jackson and the Confederate dead. It was Richmond's first Memorial Day, achieved through the efforts of a little group of women who formed the membership of the Ladies Memorial Association for the Confederate Dead of Oakwood. The president of that staunch band was Mary S. Smith, and it is our privilege tonight to have with us one of Mrs. Smith's great-granddaughters, Miss Marion L. Gordon. Doubtless, Miss Gordon, you've heard many stories of your great-grandmother's activities in those times.
Yes, Mr. Avery, I have. It might be interesting to our friends in distant places to learn that these impressive exercises were first held in historic Old St. John's Church here in Richmond, where Patrick Henry delivered his immortal speech.
Tell me, Miss Gordon, why was May the 10th chosen?
Because it was the anniversary of General Jackson's death at Guinea Station, as well as the 73rd anniversary of the Richmond Light Infantry Blues, who marched in the procession.
And was General Lee on hand?
No, unfortunately, his duties at Washington and Lee University kept him from attending. May I read that part of his letter expressing his regret?
Yes, indeed.
General Lee wrote, "It would be most grateful to my feelings to unite in the celebration of a society formed for so pious an object. The graves of the Confederate dead will always be green in my memory, and their deeds will be hallowed in my recollection. With great respect, your obedient servant, R. E. Lee."
Thank you, Miss Gordon. By the way, isn't it true that the wife of the Commander-in-Chief of the GAR was in the South at that time?
Yes, Mrs. John Logan was touring southern battlefields and probably was in Richmond then.
Which reminds us that another of our guests tonight has a mighty interesting story about Mrs. Logan's visit. I'd like to introduce Miss Annie Mann of our neighbor city of Petersburg, Virginia. Miss Annie, won't you tell us something about yourself first?
Thank you, Mr. Avery. Well, for the past 20 years, I've been with the Petersburg Progress Index.
Wasn't it rather unusual for a woman to be working on a newspaper 20 years ago?
I reckon so, but you see, when the World War came, it was necessary for everyone to do his part. There were very few men left at the newspaper, and every one of them wanted to answer the call to duty.
So you volunteered your services to release one of those men?
Well, maybe so.
I see. Well, Miss Annie, isn't it true that after the war between the states, your mother became one of the original members of the Ladies' Memorial Association in Petersburg?
Yes, she was. And a friend of Mrs. William Joins, the president, who arranged the details of our first observance of Memorial Day, which took place in Blandford Cemetery on June the 9th, 1866. And it was the crowds and the activity, the flags, the flowers, that attracted the notice of Mrs. Logan that afternoon when she visited the sacred spot.
Then Mrs. Logan was there.
My goodness, yes. And by the way, Mr. Avery, when Mrs. Logan drove through old Blandford Cemetery that day, her hat driver was a famous old Negro named John Dixie.
John Dixie, eh? And you say he was famous?
John Dixie? Well, I knew him well. He always wore a tall silk hat. He owned and drove the finest hack in Petersburg. And the old man was to her to say many a time, "Ain't nobody going around with John Dixie except quality folks."
And I imagine old John explained what was going on to Mrs. Logan.
He did. And added, "There's Miss Joins now." And you know, Miss Logan was so impressed that she said, "I'm going to speak to her," and started to get right out of her carriage. But a northern woman with her protested that it might not be wise because many southern people still felt a little hard towards northerners. Mrs. Logan's simple reply was, "A lady is a lady wherever you find her, and I'm going over to speak to her." She did, was received with courtesy, and a lasting friendship resulted. And that, Mr. Avery, according to a letter written by Mrs. Logan 30 years later, is how she took the story of Confederate Memorial Day back to her husband. And you'll recall from your history that 2 years later, at her suggestion, General Logan himself was responsible for the declaration of May the 30th, 1868, as the first National Decoration Day.
And do you happen to know why May the 30th was chosen?
Well, I have heard that May the 30th was the date of the discharge of the last Union volunteer. But another thing, there would be more spring flowers in the north on that day.
Well, that is interesting. But we have more ground to cover, so with thanks to Miss Marion Gordon of Richmond and Miss Annie Mann of Petersburg, we take you now from the WRVA studios to one of Virginia's most hallowed spots, the Confederate Veterans Home in Richmond, where Jeff Baker is waiting.
Surrounded as we are here among relics of battle, there still stands out the figure of Old Sorrel, the favorite mount of General Stonewall Jackson. This famous horse, with his nostrils seemingly still quivering from the scent of powder smoke, is carefully preserved to perpetuate the memory of his deeds on the battlefield. He greets you as you enter this modest building and proudly stands guard over the men who wore the gray. Before we call some of these veterans to our microphone here at Robert E. Lee Camp, let's ask a question or two of Dr. P.D. Lipscomb, who is in charge of the Confederate Veterans Home. Dr. Lipscomb, how long ago was this camp established?
The home was established in 1884, which makes it 55 years old.
And what was the greatest number of veterans to live here at any one time?
At one time, we had as many as 350 veterans living here.
Well, how many veterans live here now, Doctor?
There are only 7 veterans here now.
And time has taken its toll, even in these peaceful and sacred surroundings. We're going to hear from some of these men now as they chat with another of WRVA's representatives, Randolph Saunders.
Thank you, Jeff. And first, let's chat with John Shaw. Howdy, Mr. Shaw.
Howdy, John.
Mr. Shaw, how old are you, sir?
104.
104. And when were you born?
1835.
And I believe you said the month of February.
February the 6th.
That's splendid, and you certainly don't look your age. This climate certainly agrees with you, Mr. Shaw.
I feel it.
With whom did you serve during the war, Mr. Shaw?
What?
With whom did you serve during the war?
I served up third.
The cavalry leader?
Yes.
And what was your opinion of General Stuart?
Stuart was a fine man.
And you fought all through the war?
Yes.
For 4 years?
4 years.
And were you ever wounded? Were you ever wounded?
No.
You were never wounded?
Never wounded.
And why do you suppose you were never wounded?
Well, they couldn't catch me.
Oh, they couldn't catch you?
No.
You don't mean to tell me you ran?
I had to run.
Oh, you had to run sometimes?
Oh.
You were a member of the cavalry, weren't you?
Yeah.
And you were a courier?
Yeah.
And do you think that the Yankee generals were fine people?
Well, some of them were.
Some of them were. And what was one of the gentlemen that you liked very, very much?
Well, I liked one of them better than the rest.
And who was that?
I can't think of his name.
George B.?
Yeah.
McClellan, wasn't it?
McClellan.
And why did you like George B. McClellan better?
Well, he was a better man. And he was really a man of my sentiments. But in order to save his property in the North, he had to go Republican.
So he was a Democrat who turned Republican, is that right?
He had to go Republican.
And you didn't think much of him for that, did you?
Right?
You didn't think much of him for that, did you?
Well, I didn't. Oh, there wasn't much wrong about it.
Well, Mr. Shaw...
He had to go somewhere.
He had to go somewhere, so he went to the Republicans, is that so? And, Mr. Shaw, will you tell me this? When you talk of a third party, do you think we should have a third party?
No.
You don't?
No, no.
And why?
I don't know what they want with it, but of course the two parties can't do anything.
That's very interesting, too. Well, how are you going to vote the next election?
I'm going to vote the Democrat ticket.
A straight Democratic ticket?
Yeah.
Splendid. And are you a conservative Democrat?
Right.
Are you a conservative Democrat?
Yes, sir.
You are, absolutely. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. And here's another grand old man of the Confederacy whose coat lapel bears the name Colonel Jeddebe Blizzard. To us, he's just Jack Blizzard. Not Jack Frost, but Jack Blizzard. And, Mr. Blizzard, you certainly did have a lot of kidding about your name during the war, didn't you?
I certainly did.
Well, I don't think that you look like a blizzard at all. You're too warm-hearted, sir.
I'm a warm number and always have been.
Well, with whom did you serve during the war, Jack?
I served with Turner Ashby and Stonewall Jackson.
And then you can tell us something about Sorrel, can't you?
Well, I've seen him many times.
You've seen him many a time.
I don't know much about his history.
And do you think that he looks very much like the horse that's stuffed here in the cage? In the case?
Yes, yes, that favors him very much.
Favors him
about
very much.
As much as a dead horse can look like a live one.
Well, we thank you very much, Mr. Blizzard. Now, here's Mr. Thomas. Mr. Thomas, how old are you, sir?
92 years old.
With whom did you serve during the war?
Down Fitzhugh Lee, 2nd Virginia Cavalry.
The famous cavalry leader?
Yes, sir.
And you were with him when he broke through Grant's lines where?
At Five Forks.
At Five Forks. I thought you told me that you broke through the lines with him at Five Forks. How old were you then?
I'm 18.
Just a youngster. And later you served with who?
With General R.E. Lee.
The General R.E. Lee at Appomattox.
At Appomattox.
And you were at Appomattox.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thomas, very, very much. And we appreciate all of you gentlemen talking to us this evening. And good health and long life to you and to all your comrades.
Thank you, sir.
We return you now to our New York studios.
You've been listening to a special program presented by the Columbia of Memorial Day. Next Monday night at the same time, the workshop will present High Boy by Eustace Wyatt, adapted from the short story, Too Far Gone, by William Francis. John Tillman speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.